Well, good morning and welcome. Thanks so much for being here. There is something we're going to start off with that I'm pretty sure is true, whether you've been in church your whole life or once, whether you're 4 or you're 14 or you're 40, whether you have been a Christian your whole life or have never considered it before. There is one statement that is certainly and absolutely true, and it's this: everybody has a different life experience. Right? Everybody's experience is a little bit different. We're all a little unique, whether it's where we grew up or what happened and what it looks like. And those life experiences sort of shape the things that we do and the ways that we think. For example, let me give you a couple of examples, and we'll see if you can see the contrast in those two. When I was 4, my parents split up, which means I jumped between houses quite a bit. We split holidays. When I was 10, I got 3 new siblings. I've owned 8 cars. I've lived in 5 or 6 different places. Both of my parents have owned their own businesses. I've personally had about 3 different career changes. And because I was a youth pastor for so long, you know, every 2 years you get a whole cycle of new kids and new people. And so for me, because of everything that has informed my life experience so far, transition is just one of those things. Like, I don't know, it doesn't really scare me. I've got my hockey hour right now is in transition, and the guy who's been running it forever is totally freaked out by it and doesn't know where the next person is coming from, and I'm like, it's fine, don't worry about it. Are there any other me's? Just be brave, raise your hand. Are there any people who are just like, transition doesn't scare you at all, you're totally good, you're totally fine? Okay. Now let's look at the person beside you. As I'm going to look at the person beside me. Good morning, Lauren. That's my wife. I wrote all these down just to make sure I did them sequentially. So let me get this. Okay. Lauren's parents are together the entire time. She grew up in her home, which meant she never moved around. There wasn't a bouncing. She was always there. Everybody came to their house for Christmas. Everybody. Even on Christmas, they didn't go anywhere. Everybody came to her. She's had the same single sibling since she was 3. She basically has kind of had one career path. She's lived in 3 homes, but 2 of them were owned by her parents, and the other one is with us. She's had one car. Okay. Lauren is the model of consistency. She likes things organized. She likes to know when the next thing is coming. She'd much rather. My wife hates surprises. Is there anybody like that? Is it the other person that you are sitting beside? Right, okay. Have you bumped up against that before? Okay, we certainly have, right? The way you experience your life, there's this phrase that says like you're a product of your environment. And that's true. The things that you grow up around and the way that you grow up informs what you are thinking about. And so we talked last week that your experiences, your expectations, your attitudes, and your stories, all of those things that would have happened throughout both of our lives, inform our thoughts and our actions. For me, they're informed by going, whatever. Honestly, like, if I have the same thing going on for too long, I'm the guy that will sometimes kick something just to break it, just so it's new and I can fix it, right? Whereas Lauren's like, can we just not break that thing and fix the other 4 things that you broke before? No, so, you know, there's just the way that these stories interact with our lives, they inform our thoughts and our actions. And another word for that is this word that we're using for this series called worldview. Your thoughts, your experiences, your attitudes, and your stories, the things that you grew up doing and knowing, the people you grew up being around, all of those things affect your worldview. And here's the thing about worldview. Your worldview informs how you hear all news, okay? This was never more true than it was through COVID. The way that you grew up, whether you had somebody that was trusting or that you had a lot of relationships that broke your trust, that informed the way you heard certain news. Your socioeconomic position informed the way you heard the news. The way that you lived, and whether you were, if you were a homebody, you're like, this is sweet. And if you're like me, who just wants to leave home, you're like, this is awful. All of those things, they informed the way we heard the news. And this is the same with, you know, when we hear about war across the world, when we hear about elections or things going on in our lives, when we hear about God, all of the things that are a part of your worldview inform all of the news that you hear, which means, and I'm not sure we think about this enough, but this is the point of this whole series. This is why we're going to go through the gospel message 5 times. It's why Rachel did it this morning before that second set. It's because your worldview informs how you hear what we call the good news, the gospel message, the idea that Jesus came to earth to save, to liberate, to conquer sin. The way we hear that story is often informed by the life we've lived up until that point. And you know this because some of you grew up in the church and you've had a very different experience with the gospel message than somebody who just got here 20 minutes ago who might be in their mid-30s. There's a larger shift in somebody's life like that in an immediate period because of the things over before. But for somebody like me who grew up in the church, it's a bit of a different experience. You see what I mean? The way that we talk about this, the way we hear the story, it's all informed. And so last week we said this. We said, if you want to make the good news sound like good news, you need to know why it's good news for everyone, right? If you want the good news to sound like good news, we need to know why it's good news for everybody. And this statement might make you a little uncomfortable, but I promise you it's not heretical. Right, Fred? He doesn't know what I'm going to say yet. Okay. It's okay. Right? The message doesn't change, and what Jesus did doesn't change, but because of our life experience and the way that we've walked through, sometimes it means different things to different people. Sometimes they interact with that story in a bit of a different way. I'm getting a nod. This is good. Okay, I'm not fired yet. They go, yeah, I'm not sure that I relate to this part of the story, but I really got it when I heard this part. It's why people have a favorite Bible verse or a favorite book or a favorite chapter or a favorite parable or a favorite miracle. Usually when you have a favorite something, it's because it really related to something that you just felt connected to. So I would challenge you to go back maybe a little bit later today and look at whatever your favorite thing is and go, I wonder how my life previous to this moment informed why that thing is my favorite. And I would bet you'll learn something about yourself. And we're called to this. This is really important because in 1 Peter 3:15 it says, in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord and always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. I think these two words that I've highlighted in this scripture are really cool, and they're not usually the ones we always focus on, or if we do, we think about them differently. When we think of everybody, usually we go like 10,000 foot view, blanket. Everybody who comes up to me, I need to be prepared to talk to. But if I need to be prepared to talk to them, the other thing I need to know is, who am I talking to? What do they need to hear? What's their lived experience? What's their life experience? What questions do I need to ask before I give them this story? Because there's a truth here in this word, the reason for the hope that you have. As we are learning through this series, and as we're going to continue through, the hope that you have might be through a different lens than the hope that somebody else has. Now, Jesus came and saved us all the same, but we all experience hope differently, and because of that, we all see it differently, we all express it differently, and we all look for it in a different way, which means if we really need to be ready to talk about it with everybody, we need to know what the hope is, not only for us, but we should probably try to understand other people's views a little bit more. Because what we really want through this whole Easter season, as we lead up, very often we take like Easter morning and that's where we give that big gospel message. But I think it's more important than that. I think if we do it for 5 weeks in a row, for 5 different perspectives, hopefully one of two things happen. One, if you're here this morning and that's not something that you can relate to or you're not there yet, maybe you'll hear it from a perspective you've never heard it before and you'll go, oh, I've been listening to this forever, but that actually makes more sense to me. And two, maybe there's somebody in your life that you've been talking to about God, but they've just never had it. It's just never clicked. But if you sit back and look at that person and go, I wonder what this person's life is like and where their struggle is, you might be able to frame that story, not in a way that manipulates the story, because you can read that story so many different ways. You can just tell it in a way that's actually relatable. It's why Jesus used so many analogies and so many parables, because different groups of people needed to hear the same thing in different ways. And there's this guy named Paul Jones, and he came up with these five theological views on how we hear the gospel message. And here are the five: separation and reunion. That's the one that we talked about last week. The idea that we feel separated from our Creator. We're abandoned. We don't know what to do. Like, we kind of feel like orphans here on earth. Whether you're a Christian or not, sometimes you just feel like you're alone and you got to figure out where that group is around you. And it's that reunion piece. It's the longing to be back together that really drives home the message. Conflict and vindication, that's what we're going to talk about today. Emptiness and fulfillment, there's something missing in my life, and how do I know what that is? Condemnation and forgiveness, these are people who walk around with guilt and shame about the things that they've done and don't know how to get over it. And then suffering and endurance. These are the five worldviews that we're talking about through this series. If you missed last week, I would encourage you to go back and look at that. But each week, you're going to hear a little bit more. Hopefully, this builds on itself. Because what you're going to get is two things through the series. One, you're going to get a new way probably to tell the gospel message. And two, hopefully, if you're here and this isn't something you're on board with yet, you're going to hear something that finally goes, I get it, that makes sense to me. So let's talk this week about conflict and vindication. This is this worldview. This is, you know, non-Christians in this worldview, okay? If you're not a Christian and you're in this worldview, here's the question you're asking. You're asking, you're asking, why has God allowed this to happen? Like, if you're talking to somebody about God and you're not a person who believes in Jesus, we've all heard this. Somebody goes, why would a God who loves his people so much allow so many bad things around to happen? This is somebody who's dealing with the conflict in the world. Somebody who's like, ah, this just doesn't feel right. Things feel like they should be more broken than they are. And we all sort of know the solution to the problem, but we just can't get there. And why is that the case? And I just don't know how to feel about this. And this is a great way to identify this worldview in somebody. As a Christian, you know, your question might be, how has God liberated me from this problem? I know that God is the liberator. That's what I'm taught. That's what I'm told. But it doesn't really feel like I'm liberated from this thing. And so I'm in conflict here, and I need a resolution, and how do I do that? Here's the big question that I think everybody almost asks, and it's this: was it worth it? Whatever it is, there have been moments in your life where you've gone through a really, really hard time, and you've looked back on that hard time a couple years later, and you've gone, wow, that was extremely difficult, and I was stretched, and that was really tough, and we had some moments, but I'm not sure I'm glad we went through it, but at the end, it was worth it. Most of us have had at least one experience where we feel like it was worth it. And that's the big question when you're in a moment of conflict. It's, is this worth it, or is it going to be worth it? The concept that's sort of like all's well that ends well. People know that the conflict is part of it, but they need a way forward. And so people with a worldview that see conflict and then need vindication or need a resolution, here's what they're looking at. Their problem is that we are living under oppression or that there is injustice in the world. Okay? Where somebody somewhere, whether it's me or somebody else, is oppressed, and in the world there is injustice, and I am not okay with that. World One last week, the one we talked about, when you see people hurting, when you see injustice, a World One view, I need to get home worldview, is like, that makes me really sad, or I need to figure out how to live through this, okay? That's not this one. This one, the reaction is a lot different. I think the best way to maybe describe this in contrast to last week is when you have somebody with that World One view, that sort of separation and reunion, and we've all done this, we've all been in this line, we've all been at a funeral, we've all either been in the line where you're meeting the family or you've met somebody after, or somebody who just passed away, And the separation and reunion, whether you're a person who sees the world that way or you're a person who just thinks you're talking to somebody that way or needs to see the world that way, the advice that sometimes you hear or you get is you'll hear phrases like, well, God called that person home, or they're in heaven and you'll get to see them soon. And for somebody with a separation and reunion worldview, that's actually comforting. Because you're like, that's right, we're separated now, but we will be back together. And God called them back to the place where they were intended to be, a much better place than us. But for world two, for conflict and resolution, this not only doesn't work, this makes people really upset. This makes people go, no. Death isn't acceptable. So when you look at somebody and you walk through a funeral line and that person has a worldview, a conflict and vindication, and you look at that person and you go, God called them home and you'll be there soon. That person's literal response is, I couldn't care less. Because right now I'm in conflict because this happened and it shouldn't be happening. And here's what happens. Those people get angry. Right? That's the feeling. You get angry. You don't get sad when you see injustice. You don't see sad when you see oppression. You get mad when you see oppression. You get really ticked off when you see injustice. And those two little things change the entire way, not only that you learn to talk to somebody, but the entire way you frame the gospel message. The psalmist in Psalm 73 says, this is what the wicked are like. Always free of care, they go on amassing wealth. Surely in vain this person is ticked off. In vain I have kept my heart pure. There's really no reason, I'm just doing it. That's not a happy person. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure and have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been afflicted, and every morning brings new punishments. This is somebody that is upset. And coming to somebody like that and going, it's all going to be okay, they look at you and go, but it's not right now, so what you got for me? Right? And this is why the gospel message is, I got a couple of you smiling at me right now, which is like I'm starting to figure out who the world twos are. This is good. Okay. They're like, yeah, I am mad. I know. We'll get there. Okay. I'm not the right person to talk to, though. We have professionals for that. Okay, so you're angry. You see conflict in the world, and you need it to be resolved. And when people see conflict in the world, and Christianity or religion or church or God or Jesus or Easter or Christmas or any of it comes up, people are one of two ways. They're on one of two sides. They are either angry at God or they're angry with God. They're either angry at God. How could a God that loves everything and loves everybody and made us in his own image allow this to happen? I'm mad at you, God. Or you can be angry, and okay, I'm a little bit of a theological stretch here, but just let me have the whatever. Or you're angry with God. You're looking at God going, God was so passionate about freeing the oppressed that he sent Christ to the earth to die just to make sure it happened. And so what I want to do is get on that train. And I have that same upset nature about what has happened to the world that God has, and I want to jump on what Jesus has done, and how do I make sure that every day I follow what Jesus has taught me, because I see that that is a path to resolution in this conflict. Is this relatable so far? Have you had conversations like this? Somebody at some point in your life has come up to you and gone, thanks, Nate. We were just talking about you last week. It was pretty funny. You've all had conversations about this. You're either mad at God or you're mad with him. And this can actually both happen when you're a Christian and when you're a person with faith. And this, I bet you, can happen when you're not too. This is a little harder because you're not quite there yet. But when you present, can you see already in the contrast from last week to this week, when people see the world in a different way, they're going to hear the gospel a different way? And so if you've got somebody whose worldview, they see conflict and they need resolution, they see injustice and they need to see justice, then who is Jesus to that person? Last week, Jesus was the person that brought us home because we were separated and we needed to be brought back together. And Jesus is the person that brought us home. But for the person in this worldview, Jesus is the liberator. Jesus is the warrior. Jesus is the one that came to change it. Okay, the concept of world two revolves around heroes or warriors. You think about any movie you've ever seen, the hero doesn't mind that they're in the middle of the conflict because they know at the other end it's gonna get fixed. They're not particularly thrilled about the hard time they're going through, but they push through it because they know at the end of the day the problem is solvable. Okay, they perceive the world as unbalanced and they perceive the world as unfair. And so what we need is a liberator. We need a warrior. We need somebody who comes and fights injustice. And here's a really interesting just little thing. In part, it's a church thing. In part, it's a not understanding our worldviews well enough thing. In part, it's a culture thing right now, which is one of the tough parts. But right now, in this moment, some groups of Christians, particularly, and I'm going to make a broad brush blanket statement, so throw things at me later, please, when you ask a follow-up and I tell you that I'm not, like, I know that, whatever, okay. Conservative evangelical Christians, of which this church is and I am one, sometimes have a problem talking about, like, injustice, specifically in the context that we're in right now, like social justice issues, because we don't know how to talk about it, because we see something like Black Lives Matter, or we see a concept that we hear about like feminism, or we see people at war and around the world, and for some reason, we just get our backs up. And in part, it could be because our worldview just isn't as passionate about that stuff as other people's. And so when you see somebody who's a liberator, somebody who seeks out injustice, they go, that's a problem that I just feel like I need to fix. But because so much of the world pushes up against that problem, as the psalmist talked about, sometimes you feel like you need to push harder just to get to the middle, just to be heard. And then all of a sudden, that group of people who are really warriors, they're liberators, they're, I'm seeing an injustice and I need to see it. They're seen as radicals because of how hard they have to push the agenda just to get put in front of somebody. And then we, because of our worldview and our perspectives, get a little bit bent out of shape because we don't know how to handle that. I struggle with this a lot. I don't know how much or how little to talk. I try to do my best not to be super political from here because I just don't think that's helpful, especially in our context and our culture right now. But because of that, I probably go the other way, which means I don't talk about it enough. And we probably are all that way too. But here's the thing. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus, being God, had a bit of an advantage over us, so don't feel bad about the fact that you don't know exactly how to do this yet. But Jesus was able to speak into injustice and liberate people who were struggling and look at the oppressed and look at the imbalance in the world and go, that's not okay, and I'm here to fix it. Luke 2 says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He has set me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners," that's liberation, "and recovery for the sight of the blind," that's reconciliation, that's restitution, "and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Who is Jesus? Jesus is the Messiah. To people who have a worldview of conflict, to people who just seem to see injustice everywhere, they don't want to hear, well, when we get to heaven, it'll be better. They want to hear, what's God doing about this now? And that's the way we answer the question. This is why getting to know people and being in relationship with people is so important. Paul writes to the Galatians, he says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened against a yoke of slavery. Paul's looking at this brand new church in this very popular city, Galatia. This church that is really struggling to follow Jesus in and amongst all the things that are happening in its culture. And Paul is saying, Christ has come to set you free of all of the injustices and all of the things and all of the way you feel oppressed, either by your government or by your neighbor or by whoever of the people around you, because Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the liberator. And when we talk to somebody who has that worldview, that's how we frame the gospel story. They say, well, who is Jesus? Now, you could say Jesus was this guy who was born in Nazareth, and he grew up, and he got lost because he went to church and his parents wanted to go home early, and whatever else. You can tell five or six of the stories. You can talk about his death and resurrection. But if you're talking to somebody who you know is like a social justice warrior, somebody who just sometimes, this one's going to hurt a little bit, so I'm going to give you a minute. Also, I'm thirsty. Sometimes we label people as people who complain a lot. Everybody knows somebody who complains a lot. Everybody knows somebody who's just like, nothing's ever right. There's always a problem. It's somebody else. It's something else. It's the person that drove. It's the job. It's the whatever. It's the this, the that, the that, the that, the that. And you're like, shut up already. Okay. Can you reframe that for a minute? Can you look at somebody who just seems to complain a lot, who seems to find the problems and everything and go, I wonder if this person has a conflict and resolution worldview. And if they do, they don't need to hear that it's all going to be okay. What they need to know is Jesus is the liberator, that he defeats the oppressor, that that problem that you're seeing, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it for you. That does suck. That's really bad. That's a huge problem, and that's not fair. And guess what? Jesus saw that problem too. He saw it way before you got here, and he came to earth in order to die and take on the sin and oppression of the world, because even if it's not all going to get fixed here right now in this moment, like your hero that's in the middle of whatever movie you're watching, it's not fixed here, but by the end, we are okay with the conflict because we know at the end there's a resolution. You can laugh at that person and go, look, you're in the middle of this conflict right now and I can help you try to deal with it in the moment, but I want you to know that Jesus also saw that conflict, and that he came to do something about it, and that you can lean on his teaching and his strength and his understanding to help you not only get through this, but to get through the rest of the mess, because at the end, you've got somewhere to go. If you just look at somebody a little different and try to figure out where they're coming from, it's amazing how easy it is to encourage them and get them excited about the gospel message. So, why does somebody have hope? What gives somebody hope? Well, there's a promise from a theological perspective. We look at the promise of the new earth. We look at Revelation 21. It says, and then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband, was no longer. Oh, I'm not sure that's supposed to be there. My last slide too. I almost got through. It's like a game. Put the board at zero. I think Julia's got a whiteboard in the office. The good news is that at the end of the struggle, at the end of the injustice, at the end of the oppression, it actually gets solved. And people who are in the middle of conflict and can't see their way out aren't looking for a pat on the head and a keep it up sport. They're looking for a map. They're looking to say there is a way out of this oppression and their injustice, and here's what Jesus did to solve it, and let's start doing that. Because I don't think there's anybody in this room, honestly, whether you're a Christian or not, if you read the things that Jesus taught and the things that his disciples wrote and the way he told you to treat other people, there's really nobody in this room that doesn't think if we just did that, we'd probably find our way out of it. Jesus gave us the map. We're just a little too broken to follow it all the time. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It does. The good news is that Jesus came to fix the problem and that he overcame death. And guess what? It worked. That's the good news. So if you want to talk to somebody about the gospel message, and there's somebody who's got a problem with separation and reunion, then I would encourage you to go back last week, look at that. But if you've got somebody in your life who you know is a person who just sees conflict, that just sees injustice, that just sees oppression and is passionate about it, we get uncomfortable because we don't know how to fix this stuff sometimes. You look at a problem like inequality among people or countries or governments because some people are oppressed and don't have freedoms and other people do. And there are these big topics that we just don't always know how to talk about. And so what happens is somebody who's super passionate about it will bring it up to you and you'll just go, yeah, well, what can you do? And they're like, anything, something. Can we do something? And all you taught that person in that moment is you're not the right person to talk to. And that was your moment. That was your moment to go, yeah, I do see that oppression and injustice. And you know what? I don't always know everything to do about it. But what I do is I look to the way Christ said to teach and talk to and treat people. And I wonder if we could rally around that a little bit and see what we could do about this. But if you go, yeah, then you've got somebody with a worldview who knows you're not the person to talk to. So we want people to hear the good news. The good news should be good news for everybody, but what we need to remember is that not everybody hears it the same way because we all grew up in a bit of a different spot. Whether it's somebody who loves transition and gets bored without it, or somebody who loves stability. Whether it's somebody who feels like they're separated from home, or somebody who can't go home until everything's fixed. We need to know the people we're talking to enough to know how to present the gospel message to them, because the good news should be good news for everybody. And if we're called to tell it to the people that we meet, then one of the things that we absolutely need to do is know why it's good news for everybody. Let me pray for you as we try to figure this out a little bit. Let this sink in. And I'm going to be bold and pray that each one of us actually have an opportunity this week to recognize this in some people and find a way into this conversation. God, thank you so much for sending Jesus. Thank you for sending Jesus as the liberator, the one who freed the oppressed. God, the one who saw the injustice in the world and went, I'm coming to fix it. And the one who was willing to give his life in order that we would have life abundant and life eternal with you. And Lord, sometimes this is a hard thing to describe to people or a hard thing to talk about, and I just pray that we would get an opportunity this week not to just let this sink in and figure out how to talk about it, but that you would give us an opportunity to do it. And for the people that are here right now, honestly, including me, that are really scared about that part of the prayer, that are like, oh, somebody else, not me. Lord, give us the courage and the strength. Equip us. Remind us that it's the Holy Spirit within us that's doing that it's not even us, that it's you. That we just need to be a vessel for your good news because you came and did the work and showed us the way, and it's our job not to reinvent the wheel, God, but just to follow it. Lord, I pray for those who are feeling oppressed. I pray for those under injustice in the world, whether it's wars overseas where people groups are caught in the middle of terrible situations and governments that aren't their fault. God, we pray that you would intervene on their behalf, that you would find a way to fix that oppression and that injustice. Lord, whether it's for our neighbors next door that we know are in a bad spot, whether it's for somebody in our family, or Lord, maybe we're feeling oppressed. God, I pray that you would continue to show us the way through that and encourage us that you are for us, that you're the one that loves us, that you're the one that cares for us, that we are no longer oppressed, that we're no longer slaves to the fear and the injustice and the oppression, but God, that you are the one that came to liberate and save. Amen. You guys can sit for a minute. At the end of every one of these, we're going to try to tell the gospel through the lens of somebody in this worldview. Maybe it helps you hear it a little bit more or see it for this week or another time. And so here's maybe one of the ways that you could look at it. You could say, God created the world. He created perfectly for you and for me because he wanted to be in relationship with us. And he gave us the choice to follow him because he didn't want drones. He actually wanted that genuine relationship. But we wanted to be like God. We wanted all of the things that God had. And so we turned away from the things that he gave us in order to try to make things for ourselves. And the more people that came to be and the larger the world got, and you've seen this in your own life, the more people there are, the more people that want all the stuff. And a lot of times the only way to get all the stuff, to get everything you need, is to step on somebody else to take a walk up that ladder. And I don't know if you've been the person who stepped on somebody before, and I don't know if you've been the person that's been stepped on before, but if you've lived in this world, one of those two, if not both, have happened. And in the moments where you have been stepped on, you have felt like that wasn't fair. You have felt oppressed. You have felt pushed down. You have felt not listened to. You have felt lesser than, because that's what it looks like when we fight each other and we try to be God. And God, seeing this happening and knowing that we weren't going to be able to fix it ourselves, put a plan together to show us the way out. And that plan was Jesus. And Jesus came to this world and first of all, lived a perfect life, was never selfish, didn't step on anybody else to get to where they needed to, didn't have to push people down. Not only that, he was God, but didn't act like it, because if he did, that would have been oppression on its own. So he didn't even have all, he didn't even take advantage of all the power that he had, knowing that if he had used that power dynamic, it would have done the thing that you're feeling, which is just get pushed down. And instead, he did everything he could to not only show us that he viewed himself as equal, but this group over here that wasn't as tall, he tried to raise up. And this group that thought they were way up here, that he tried to bring them down. And if you look at everything that Jesus ever taught, what he taught is that he believed that the conflict could be solved and resolved if we all just loved each other and lived on a level playing ground. And when you think about me being a Christian, that's the part I want you to think about. You can scroll on TikTok, you can scroll on Instagram. There are some people with some crazy theology that say some wild things. There's some really mean people that, not surprisingly, as I just said, try to take any power they can to push you down. And sometimes people use the Bible to do that because the Bible's a really powerful tool and you can manipulate it to oppress people, but that is not what God gave it to us for. God gave it to us to show us how we should actually live together. And I know it feels like there's no way out and that it's not going to get solved here, but the really cool thing that happened is the reason we celebrate Easter, which is when Jesus died and everybody thought that was it, that was the end. 3 days later, he showed us that he was even beyond death, which is the only thing we haven't figured out how to fix. He can do it all. And when I have hope in Jesus, when I'm going through a hard time, or when I see you going through a hard time, that's where it's coming from. And so I don't know where you're at and I don't know how you're feeling, but that's who Jesus is to me. What do you think about that? And then don't be afraid to just be quiet for a really long time. If you know somebody who sees the world that way, present the gospel to them in that way. The good news should be good news for everyone. And because it's good news for me and all of you, I say, feel confident and blessed in that good news. Have a great week, and we'll see you again really soon. Thanks for coming to church this morning.